Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The CV Report.
TPS Report.
The CV Report.
Give us one word to describe what you're going through right now.
Sucky.
Yeah. I know it's just a Nissan Frontier, but in my mind, this thing's an M1 Abrams tank.
Honey, take the wheel. I'm going to stick my head out of the sunroof.
Look, any self-respecting veteran should grow a beard and have a belly.
That's the dumbest thing I've heard all day.
Like, if we're going to start getting angry now, it's a little late.
Is live in D.C. with the update on all of this. Good morning. Maybe. I guess not.
The CV Report.
Welcome to the CV Report. I'm your host, Navy veteran Phil Briggs. And as always, this episode's powered by Entercom's ConnectingVets.com, where we connect vets every day with stories and news that are of interest to veterans and their families. Lots of interesting things on today's show, including some clarification on the Supreme Court's earlier decision regarding transgender in the military.
We talked to someone from the DOD about how no policy change is going to be made immediately.
And an update on Nathan Phillips, the Native American Vietnam Times veteran involved in that viral video with protesters and high school kids from Kentucky.
When I come home, those times, I got spit on, actually spit on. Called a baby killer.
The story keeps changing all over the place, but what hasn't changed is everybody keeps labeling this guy a Vietnam vet.
We've got an update for you and some interesting things we uncovered in his service record.
I'm what they call a recon ranger.
But first, let's check out some headlines. And here to run through some headlines for us is our colleague and reporter, Libby Howe from ConnectingVets.com. How are you?
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. And a lot happening in the news this week that's relevant to veterans.
Yep, there is even though the government shutdown is still rolling, we're in day, 35, 36? Somewhere around there?
Yeah.
So even with the shutdown, lawmakers were up to quite a bit of activity last week, and a lot of it very directly affected veterans. So one of the first ones from this week, lawmakers reintroduced legislation on Wednesday that would require the Department of Veterans Affairs to study the benefits of cannabis on veterans. And this came days after a pair of senators did the same. So this bill has been reintroduced in the House and in the Senate.
Very cool. Can I say that I was there at the birth of the very first H.R. 5520, which I think is what its number was, but it was called the VA Medicinal Marijuana Act of 2018. Representative Waltz from Minnesota, who now has moved on to be governor of Minnesota, but at the time he called Connecting Vets and a couple other news bureaus into his office for the unveiling of that bill before it even got into committee. And they were really sincerely hoping, and I think had full expectation, that that would be a law by the end of 2018. And I think it was one of the biggest failures of 2018 that Congress, who, let's face it, has proven many times they fail, current shutdown included, couldn't pass that. I mean, it made it out of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. It made it out of the House of Representatives. It made it to the Senate, and it never got even picked up for a vote. It just got buried. And in fact, I've got some audio here from the private interview we had with Representative Waltz and Correa from California talking about the unveiling of this bill. And I think here's where I'm questioning them as to the VA's resistance on the bill itself.
The teeth of this bill, they told me specifically that If Congress wants to facilitate federal research into Schedule I controlled substances such as marijuana, it can always choose to eliminate the restrictions. Here are the restrictions they claim that are in place, and does this bill do anything to eliminate them? FDA approval, Health and Human Services approval, sure. NIH approval, sure. National Institute of Drug Abuse approval, and the DEA site inspection and those kinds of approvals, you guys are willing to then work with them and say, call Congressman Walz.
I'm going to bring our team into this because we've been fighting with them on this, and that is the 2 points this was supposed to do. Clarify that research into medicinal cannabis is well within their authority as it sets right now, and I think outside experts have validated that for us, and then requiring them to report back what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. This issue on FDA.
So it doesn't eliminate the need for FDA approval, but it makes it clear to VA that Congress grants them authority and expects them to enter into that process to get FDA approval.
And what's so very frustrating about this is listen to how confident Representative Walz was about the timeline for this to get passed last year. Here's Leo Shane from Military Times asking him about it.
On this bill, what's your expectation for a timeline for passage? Is this something that could be tossed into the choice bills?
My hope is in it. Having the experience to do this, I think there's a chance we get this before the election. We get it done. That's our timeline to try and do it. And I think we've articulated that clearly to all of our partners in this. I think Senator Tester and the folks in the Senate, and I hope I'm not overspeaking here, is committed to making this happen too. So we really think this could happen.
Something to follow kind of closely. We've got Matt St. Singh on the marijuana beat, and he'll be keeping an eye on how that legislation goes.
Right on.
Then we have lawmakers unveiled a plan to help undocumented military spouses. It's called the Protect Patriot Spouses Act, and it would make military spouses eligible for adjustment status, and that's a process that can end in permanent resident status or a green card.
Mm.
The bill changes current law. It allows military spouses who entered the country illegally to pursue citizenship. So as the law stands now, those spouses have to leave the country before that process can be started. So this act would allow them to kind of expedite that process, start that process without having to leave the country first.
Hmm. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this was spurned or motivated by a case out of Orlando, Florida, I think. There was a Marine Corps veteran, a naturalized citizen, and his wife had been pulled over or something like that for like a speeding ticket or something. And it had come out that she entered the states illegally. But it had been like 20 years ago or something. And because she'd entered the states illegally or something and was once deported, in other words, like she crossed the border, she got caught as like a teenager or something, and then they sent her back. Well, when she was sent back, she had to sign this document that not only said she'd violated the law, but said that she could never become a citizen of the United States or some such nonsense where, you know, now subsequently getting arrested or getting pulled over, being found out to be illegal, even though she's married to a Marine veteran, a combat veteran. They deported her and split their family in half. And I believe one daughter went with mom to Mexico City, and then the other daughter stayed behind. And the kids have never known any other, you know, a country but America. A real sticky wicket. And I'm glad to see that this piece or that event has now created a piece of legislation.
Right, and I saw stuff about the situation in Orlando, but I've seen other ones too, and this is that's a problem that's affecting multiple military families, and even couples that have been married for 20-plus years are dealing with deported spouses. So hopefully this plan actually makes it somewhere the bill actually succeeds, and we can see some help for those spouses.
If only Congress would consider immigration reform. What?
I think we've got a checklist for Congress to be looking at, so.
Yeah, come on, fellas, ladies. Let's get it together, okay? Let's get an agreement about this border barrier thing. Let's get federal employees back to work. And imagine that. Let's look at the big picture of immigration.
And then we talked earlier this week with Matt St. Singh about the transgender ban, or not really the transgender ban, but the Supreme Court order that dropped about the DOD's transgender policy. So kind of following that up later in the week, we talked to someone from the DOD about how no policy change is going to be made immediately. And at the moment, they're waiting for this one last hurdle. There are 4 court cases currently active that have to do with transgender policy. And the Department of Defense has agreed with the Department of Justice that they won't move forward with any sort of policy changing or planning until all 4 of those lawsuits have been settled. One of them was settled early in January. 2 of them were settled this week. And then the last one in Maryland is still outstanding. So the DOD spokesperson said that no changes would be made while those lawsuits were still being settled. And she also went on to say that even after those are settled, there's no immediate policy change planned at the time.
Wow. So in essence, transgendered individuals still cannot begin the process of enlistment in the military. But if you are currently in, your status is on hold until these other things get sorted out. Is that more or less the deal?
That's what I believe. And we talked about how it's kind of hard to decipher what exactly the orders did and what exactly the current policies are. And it's kind of fuzzy for us. So I'm sure that it's extremely fuzzy for everyone involved.
Right. Which is why I think when we say they upheld the ban, it's a little wrong, because what they did is, as you'd said, put it on hold until these lower court cases can get some things sorted out. And I also read earlier this week an interesting thing. A lot of folks want swift reform and swift justice. You know, these court cases should be solved once and for all right away by the Supreme Court. But this legal person that was writing this, she was an attorney. Damn it if I didn't forget the name of the website. Otherwise, I'd throw it out here right now. But it was on Facebook. She'd said that in theory, you want swift justice. You want laws to change instantly, and the Supreme Court seems like an ideal place to do that. But in practice, it's the exact opposite of what should happen. If the Supreme Court were allowed to rule on everything and make swift justice and instant changes, they'd be treated like gods, and they would be changing our lives irreversibly. Whereas by letting the lower court system percolate and bubble these cases up through, you get a bunch of people arguing about things multiple times. So by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, there has been precedent. There has been cases that have been settled and argued. There have been arguments presented. It's just a more accurate way to give a final body like the Supreme Court the tools it needs to make a quality ruling. And that, unfortunately, doesn't sit well with those that want instant gratification.
Right.
And like the headlines Libby just talked about, you can find all of them on connectingvets.com. Anything else, Libby?
Nope, just hoping for some progress with the shutdown, keeping an eye on it.
Right? I mean, food banks for federal employees. I never thought I'd live to see the day. Well, thank you very much, Libby, for your reporting. And I will see you next week.
Thanks, Phil.
All right, next on the report is a man who used to sit in this very seat, my colleague and Navy veteran, Mr. Eric Dame.
Oh, so long ago. It's like a month or two ago.
I know, right? Eons in the news cycle.
Oh,
though.
Yeah.
I mean, that was eons.
Think about everything that's happened since then. I barely remember December of 2018.
Now, of course, Eric Dame, formerly the host of The Morning Briefing here on ConnectingVets.com. Now you actually are at the helm of CBS Eye on Veterans.
Yes, a nationally syndicated show that airs on CBS News Radio affiliates around the country, as well as on AFN, and also streams on ConnectingVets.com a couple times every weekend, as well as Eye on Veteran 1 Minute Reports, which air on 100-plus stations, including like WCBS in New York City. So check your local listings or just look me up on Connecting Vets and you can find it.
Right on. And we've always been proud of the reporting Eric does. And of course, it's good to put it on a national stage like you're doing with CBS Eye on Veterans. Now, you've been busy reporting this week, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, we went from a story that peaked over the weekend, one would think, with this whole, you know, misinterpretation of a viral video involving high school kids and Native Americans and veteran status, and then there's Hebrew Israelites.
Black Hebrew Israelites. They'll be very upset if you don't get their full name right. They wouldn't like you anyway, though, Phil. Trust me, I know those guys.
No, and I've seen them outside the subway here in D.C., and they don't seem to like me when I get off then either. But suffice to say, this whole thing spiraled out of control with the viral video and everybody thinking it's like, oh, kids picking on a poor Native American guy. And then all of a sudden we realize there's a bigger picture, there's a bigger story. And that's kind of where your reporting started. And I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
Tell me about what we discovered this week.
Well, it started with, you know, some red flags, again, with the way that the incident was described based on the original video. Everything seemed to add up.
Yeah.
But context is important. Longer videos come out showing that some of the things that a gentleman named Nathan Phillips, who is the Native American elder, said didn't match what we saw on video.
On video, he's the guy banging the drum.
He's the guy banging the drum a couple inches from
the high school kid's face.
The one kid's face. The kid is, you know, people decide the kid's evil because he's smirking at the guy. It's like, oh, well, what was he supposed to do? It's an odd situation, of course. And then you see the full video and the context becomes a little bit more clear. So once you hear that he's maybe not being truthful about what happened there, and you also see him referred to as a Vietnam veteran.
We are hearing from a Native American elder and Vietnam War veteran. And after a disturbing viral video shows a group of teens harassing and mocking him in the nation's capital.
You start wondering, like, huh, well, if he lied about one thing, what else might he have lied about? People started sending me messages about, hey, do you know anything about this guy? Including several Marine Force Recon veterans who were saying, what's a Recon Ranger? Because they were seeing that he had referred to himself as a Recon Ranger. And if you Google it, it comes up in like snippets that some people have put on sites at that point. In a Vogue article last year, he was at a reunion of protesters at the Dakota Access Pipeline, claimed to be a Recon Ranger. Here's the problem with that. There's no such thing in the United States military. Right. The Marine Corps has Recon. Right. The Army has Rangers. And yes, some Marine Recon members do go through Ranger training and become tabbed Rangers, but they are not referred to as Recon Rangers. So I saw that, and that really got me started digging. I asked every Marine Corps veteran that I could think of. I'm talking about guys from this era, guys from earlier eras. Some of the more modern guys said, you know, I don't know. I've never heard Recon Ranger, except one of them recalled a cadence vaguely saying, there's a cadence, I want to be a Recon Ranger. I find that, and it's basically just a ripoff of I want to be an Airborne Ranger from right. the Army. You know, it happens that way in cadences. It's kind of hard to come up with a new one. If this was a term that right. was used by a group, you would be able to find it anywhere. So that again became pretty clear initially, not confirmed, but pretty clear that's not a thing. Again, right. if no Marine knows it, the Marines, we can agree on several things about. One is they are very particular and good about recording their history, both officially on the record and the unofficial stuff. You right. know, when you talk about the Marine Raiders in World War II, that was a very small unit, and they've kept that documented very well. So mm-hmm. you couldn't find it anywhere.
Heck, they saved the bar tab from Tun's Tavern, right. I believe. I mean, that's...
So I'm working on the story based on these red flags. It's just saying, like, hey, there's some questions that people are asking about this.
Right.
It's almost impossible, if not fully impossible, to confirm a lot of it. And I get the story ready to go. There were some other things that he said. He seemed to be not saying that he served in the Vietnam War, saying that he served in, quote, Vietnam Times.
I'm going to be 63. I'm a Vietnam Times veteran. Honorable discharge. Yeah.
But the media was always referring to him as a Vietnam War veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of those things, including that Vogue article from 2018, he seemed to be hinting at, you know, recalling Vietnam without explicitly saying it.
When I come home, those times, I got spit on, called a baby killer.
Again, you can't prove that unless you get his record. A lot of people start telling me, we've tried to find his record, we're not finding one. So then you start wondering, did this guy serve at all? There's a possibility he didn't. There are a lot of people who claim a lot of things and none of it's true. There are also veterans who claim some things and some things about their service is true and other things are exaggerations.
So right there, it begins to smell of some stolen valor. And
yeah.
that's when you reached out to a friend of ours, salty old SOB. Well, that
he was reached out to me by a friend of mine who, as I'm driving home, as that initial story is being edited and being looked at for publishing, I get a Facebook message from an Air Force veteran friend of mine named Richie. Richie sends me a video and says, hey, your buddy Don Shipley found some stuff on Nathan Phillips. No one had been able to locate Phillips' records because he enlisted under a different name.
Why don't you ask the old senior chief bosun mate SEAL guy to get his records for you?
Don Shipley figured that out.
Okay. The first problem you're going to get with getting Nathaniel Phillips's military records is he did not enlist under that name. Here we go being elusive again. The name he enlisted under was Nathaniel Richard Stannard, S-T-A-N-A-R-D. I guess his adopted born name was Nathaniel Phillips. That's why everybody's having trouble, but not me.
Don Shipley found his service record and indeed found that he was not doing a job that didn't exist in the Marine Corps.
I'm what they call a recon ranger. That was my role.
He was doing a job that was very well known.
I get you down as an electrician.
He was a refrigerator repair electrician. So an electrician focusing on refrigeration and things like that. So
he was a refrigerator ranger.
Yeah, the Reefer Ranger. Some people have made even a unit badge with tab for Reefer Ranger. It's gotten pretty interesting on the internet. So at this point, we know he's been untruthful, flat out lied about what happened at the original incident. We know that he's lied about being a recon ranger. Still left up to the imagination was whether he ever claimed to be a Vietnam veteran. He kept saying Vietnam times. I've never heard that term used specifically. Vietnam era, I've heard, like at my VFW post on Long Island.
Right.
They would use it, the Vietnam guys, almost disparagingly. Like, yeah, this guy is a Vietnam era veteran. Kind of saying, like, that's not one of the guys who went over there. Particularly if it was someone who was claiming, you know, Vietnam veteran status, but
sure,
they were
Vietnam
era veteran status. They tend not to like that. And that's a bit of an understatement. So what we end up finding out the next day, a gentleman named Phil Kirpin posts on Twitter a video that he found from the Facebook page of a group called Native Youth Alliance. It's a video featuring Nathan Phillips. It's not him being interviewed by a media outlet. It's him sitting in front of a webcam and talking about himself at length. And it's the first demonstrable case that was found, some others have come up, where he specifically says, "I am a Vietnam veteran."
I got a relation, a sister, or a niece. She gave me that Vietnam colors flag, you know, the yellow, red, black one. Put some tobacco on there. She wanted me to carry it around because, you know, for her dad, Vietnam vet, you know, like that.
He talks about DD-214s. He's like, there's a box that says, you know, peacetime, or what it says in my box, in theater. There's no gray area.
Whoa.
Here. This guy specifically claims to have been a Vietnam veteran. Of course, through the Freedom of Information Act request made by Don Shipley, we know that that's not true. So now we know, lied about what happened, lied about what he did in the Marine Corps, lied about where he was in the Marine Corps. And essentially, that's kind of where the story ended up. Thankfully, Don Shipley provided ConnectingVets.com, sent to us the documents, so we were able to put those up on the site. Anybody can go to ConnectingVets.com and find them. You can search Don Shipley, and you'll find a number of stories. And one of the things I noticed, Phil, that I wanted to mention is on our social media, people were making comments about, like, you know, how dare you turn on a veteran? Look at you. You're turning on a fellow vet. You're doing this. You're doing that. I don't think that's turning on a vet. Veterans are not unassailable. Veterans are not unquestionable. If I were to tell you, Phil, that I was an EOD bomb tech and I was walking around like, you know, the, what was the movie? The EOD movie, the Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
I was walking around saving people and pulling bombs up in Iraq and doing all this stuff. You'd be right to call me out on that because I didn't do that. And it's a lie. And it disparages the people who did do it. The people who did put themselves at risk. His service, turns out, maybe wasn't so honorable. His discharge status seems to be an honorable discharge, which seems very odd given the circumstances that he was AWOL three times during his 4 years of service, was discharged as an E1, a buck private in the United States Marine Corps after 4 years. Honestly, that's kind of impressive. It's pretty hard to do. I mean, usually
in 4 years, you never once came close to a promotion.
Well, he may have, because those promotions are automatic up to a level. So I'm sure he was a Lance Corporal, I would think, once or twice. I'd have to go and look at the service record and find that. But he ended up as a private. The people who were questioning us for questioning him, that's our job. Was it the media saying, oh, he said Vietnam times, that means he's a Vietnam veteran, because they don't know? Or when he was giving his information to the reporters before the interviews, was he saying I'm a Vietnam veteran to them off the record, but then on the record saying I'm a Vietnam times veteran? It's hard to say what could have happened there, but a lot of people were wondering. Of course, the video came out, and you can see that video on ConnectingVets.com. We've got three stories now on this Nathan Phillips saga as it unfolded, but I think the key is here, it's never a problem to ask questions about someone's service, particularly if you're a veteran yourself. You know, to see people questioning veterans for questioning veterans, it's unfortunate, and I wish people would be open to the fact that if someone is being dodgy or cagey in their responses, maybe there's a reason for that. And thankfully, there are people like Don Shipley and the late, great John Lillier over at This Ain't Hell, who passed away last year, who are willing to do that constantly. I mean, Don is in the news for this week. Last week, we did a story on him outing a phony Vietnam veteran, again, tied to Marine Corps recon. He claimed to have been a recon corpsman, Navy corpsman working with recon, who is actually profiting off of it. So that's an even bigger deal.
Right.
And now there are some questions over whether Phillips may have profited over his veteran status. You know, that remains to be seen. So this story may not be done yet, but I think the main aspect of it now is kind of wrapped up. And we know who he is and we know what he was. And that is not a very good Marine and certainly not a Vietnam veteran.
And I really appreciate you chasing it down the rabbit hole. Appreciate Don Shipley for everything he's doing there and, you know, helping us find these records. Speaking of records, I have Eric's right here. And
World's Sexiest Man, twice, People Magazine. It's right there, first line.
It does say among one of your fit reps here that you...
it's not, written in pencil, but not, don't worry about that. That's how the Navy...
Not the highest motivated sailor on the team, but that's okay.
You know, it's funny that when it comes to these stolen valor cases... What I've learned from over the years, long before I would ever report on something like this, when I was still serving and I would go to This Ain't Hell and look at their stories,
yeah.
There are hallmarks of stolen valor that just keep popping up.
Right.
Again, someone being vague about their service, that's a red flag. All of us know where we were, when we were there, within, you know, some certain range of accuracy. Then you also have the guys who claim to be Special Forces, SEALs, Spec Ops, MARSOC, and tell you, well, you know, I'd love to tell you about my service record, but that's all sealed. And if you do an FOIA request, guess what? It's all sealed. The government's not going to give you that. Don Shipley is a Navy SEAL. He is a man who basically wrote the book on weapons training for the SEALs. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff.
Right.
Guess what? You can do a FOIA request on Don, who's an active Navy SEAL for a full 20-year career. You're going to find it. There is no such thing in the military, I'm not saying in the government overall, there's no such thing in the military as these secret squirrel people who that they don't admit ever were in the military.
Right.
Now, are you going to find records of what, you know, a Navy SEAL or a Green Beret did, like what their mission was, where they went while they were in on deployments and stuff like that? No, not necessarily. Some of that stuff will be redacted. But if you want to go look up Tim Kennedy, if you want to go look up Jason McCarthy from GORUCK, Nate Boyer, three Green Berets, Jocko Willink, Navy SEAL, very famous Navy SEAL. Look up any of these guys. You're going to be able
Black Rifle Coffee. Yeah.
Black Rifle Coffee. Look at Evan Hafer over there. Look at JT, Matt Bay. You're going to be able to find anyone who served in the military. You're going to be able to find their DD-214 through, and it will be redacted. It'll have some stuff redacted, personal information and stuff like that. You will be able to find it. You can do it. You need their name. You do the Freedom of Information Act request. You can contact Don Shipley to find out how to do it because, man, he's the best. And some people are angry that he's so good at it, apparently. But everyone exists. And even if he was just some person, you know, let's say Phil Briggs went to Great Lakes, Illinois in 1992, and 3 weeks into boot camp, you broke your leg or said, I don't like this, and cried and decided you wanted to go home. Guess what? There's a record of that. The day that you join, that record begins. And whether you're in for a week, 2 weeks, 30 years, that record will be there. So these people who claim that stuff, that's a huge red flag.
I guess the only real disappointment I have is that, are you telling me that they knew I cried in boot camp?
Yeah,
is that
they,
on my
they
record?
Did. That is.
Damn
that
it.
Is.
I didn't think anyone saw that.
It said CB-2. That stands for crybaby. And the 2 is the reason. And it said that you complained about breakfast and that you didn't like that they had grits. You weren't a grits guy, apparently.
I believe it was the powdered eggs I really didn't like. But hey, man, again, thank you for the reporting. It's totally fascinating, and I think this whole thing puts into context what we started with, and that is that there's always a fuller story. The guy telling you that his service record's blacked out at the bar and he just wants to buy you a drink is probably not really who he claims to be, and that in this specific situation, it's kind of unfortunate that everybody in their zeal to get on a story jumped on and defended the honor of a man who has oftentimes mischaracterized himself for the benefit of the story.
At the very least, yeah.
And that's unfortunate that exists. And I think we should all, especially in the media, really learn a lesson from this.
Here's one last thing about the media aspect of it, Phil. And that is, a lot of people are bashing the media for being the ones to call him a Vietnam veteran.
Yeah.
These weren't in-depth, you know, exposés on him. When a veteran tells a media member, I'm a Vietnam veteran. They have no reason not to believe that person. They also don't have time for like a story on a breaking news event to go in depth on that person's service record.
Right.
most, not all, but most media organizations, Washington Post and so forth, have corrected the record and said he was not a Vietnam veteran. But here's the thing. For years, we can show that he was referred to as a Vietnam veteran. Not once did he correct the record. That's not on the media. That's on him.
For both the media and people on the other end of the microphone, die by lies, but the truth, my friends, will set you free. Eric Dame, you hear him on CBS Eye on Veterans every week nationwide on a station near you, and proud to have you on the team here at ConnectingVets.com. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.